Blog Talk Radio.
It's not a catchphrase, it is a way of life. You guys know, and everybody else knows, that one man can make a difference.
Dude, are you kidding me? March for Death is probably the greatest Steven Seagal movie ever. He's not only, in the very end, in the final fight, not only does he gouge a guy's eyes out, he throws him through a wall, breaks his back, and then throws him down an elevator shaft. Greatest death scene ever.
Gentlemen, welcome to the second episode of Moose Knuckle Entertainment Radio. I guarantee this will be the best hour of your whole entire week. I am, of course, Donald Warren, and I am here with...
All right, now you're going to intro me. I am Justin Clayton.
I was going to intro you. I was going to say your name and give you the proper introduction, but you jumped the gun. You had to jump in and get your two cents in.
Because
I was here to help you.
Because I'm more important than you.
Oh, geez. You're not more important than anything. I have old shoes that are more important than you.
Okay, Don. Next topic.
Normally, we would be here with, the Knight Rider, the one man who's making a difference. But apparently, Justin, he's not here. Where's he at?
I've gotten an email from a group of people just labeling themselves as the Russians. They say they have Robert.
Are they led by Dolph Lundgren?
No. Why? He's not even Russian. Anyway,
I get him off the cues.
Anyway, they have Robert, and they're holding him up for a $15,000 ransom, which, of course, we do not have. So I brought in a special guest for this week.
Oh, God. Who did you bring in?
Mr. Producer Man, can you play his music? Great Harry Barnett.
Justin, I didn't think our show was for another month.
No, Harry. This is not our show. This is a special one time only, possibly, maybe more, where I'm bringing you on to speak to Don and to cover for Robert as he's going through this tragic time in his life.
Oh, wow. I mean... If you need the money to get Robert back, I can send it out. I can get him back for next week or 2 weeks from now, but you know, I'll be happy to join you and your producer for the night.
Nice.
Oh, and Don Warren, and Don Warren.
We can't, listen, we can't accept your third world, I guess, pesos or francs. You know, we need American dollars to get him out, okay? So thank you. We appreciate the offer, Mr. Barnett, but, you know, take your rubies or whatever they are and put them away. Let's do a show. We're here to do a show, aren't we?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I had a question for you. Harry, right? Are you familiar with, like, Comic-Con over here in the United States?
Absolutely, yeah. We get it here, too.
You have? Is it the same thing? Is it like? Is it just like the same thing in the U.S., just like they travel and do it?
Same thing, just a lot smaller.
Have you ever been to one?
Never had the chance, no. I tried to go a couple of months ago, but didn't get a chance.
Because I was wondering, because we just had the big one in New York, which is one of the big ones out here. You know, and I always liked them things. I actually got to go to it was MonsterCon they had in Cherry Hill down here maybe a couple months ago, and it was really neat. And you get to see all the stars. And I was thinking about I got to meet the guy. You're familiar with The Walking Dead? I know, Justin, you're a big fan of that.
Yes,
I'm familiar with it. Yeah, but don't watch it.
Oh, you don't? Oh, you're missing something. You got to watch it. It's an amazing show.
I don't know if it's over on Sky yet.
Oh, no, no, it is, but I'm very behind with TV. I'm like the Vince McMahon of TV.
So, yeah, I actually got to meet the black guy from T-Dog from, you know.
Wow, that's a great description, Don.
Well, no, the thing that was weird and it was really neat was that, you know, we were walking through and he was actually standing right next to us. And he was
and
just
you
like
saw a black guy.
Wow, that's a bit borderline, Mr. Clayton.
Hey, Don, I've got a question. You said you're at MonsterCon. How many kids were running away from you, and how many people were asking to take their picture of you?
Well, I mean, everybody, you know, the kids were running away from me to go tell their parents that, you know, I was there and how amazing I was, and the people were taking a picture of me because, well, let's face it, I'm me. I mean, come on.
Right, yeah, I don't think you got what I meant.
So,
okay.
What's
your story about a black guy?
No, I was just saying that, you know, I was reading all the stuff, you know, about the one in New York, and, you know, it made me think about that. That was the first time I had ever really been to one. It was really a really unique thing to see, you know. I think Robert Englund was there and you know, a couple other guys. It was really interesting to see. I'd never really been to one of those things. And it was just cool. I got to meet him, and, you know, I was just thinking about that as I was looking at the, you know, the Comic-Con stuff this week. Just figured I would share my report. Reminiscing, yeah. Even though the Walking Dead cast was charging, I think, $140 for, you know, a cast picture, which I think is a little outrageous.
Well, speaking of Comic-Con, a friend of ours there, and a guy that starred in the movie that we're working on, Patient 23, he was there. Damian Vargas, he can be reached out on his Twitter account, STB Damian Dragon. He was there, and he was actually featured. I saw in a couple interviews and a video. He did he does cosplay, and he did the. Did you see his outfit? He did a combination of Deadpool and Darth Maul. Yeah, not the Deadpool Dirty Harry movie, but Deadpool from comics.
Well, yeah, I did see that. And he does a lot of that because he does especially with his Nerd Herder show. He's really into that. You know, and I saw that, and I think that's really one of the awesome things about the, you know, the whole Comic-Con experience. I mean, you know, you see the fans come and they go in these crazy cosplay outfits. I mean, some people, you know, just do, you know, like the homemade stuff, but then you have guys, you know, like the guy we know, the Eric, I believe his name is Smoke, that goes in this huge mech gear costumes, and they're dressing up like, and it's really like this huge thing, and it's awesome. It's like every kid's, you know, dream to just, you know, go out and dress like that, and they're adults and they get paid to do it.
And a lot of those guys, they, you know, they make everything from their homes.
Yeah. You know, and some of them are so intricate. I mean, it's just like, you know, it amazes me. You know, that my first, you know, experience with that is, you know, like when I was younger, I was a wrestling fan. And you would see when you go to wrestling shows, guys would dress up like Hogan or Savage. And I never really thought, I thought like that was just a wrestling thing. But until I got, you know, kind of into the nerd stuff, the comic books and, you know, the things like that, you see it's just this whole world, and it's just, you know, it's crazy. And don't forget either, can't even not talk about the women that show up there and the costumes they have.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who hasn't dreamt about, you know, sleeping with a Mystique or, you know, a Lara Croft or, you know, things of that nature. I mean, it's just, you know, it's amazing how far it's come. And, but yeah, I mean, it was cool to do. And, you know, I'm glad, you know, I heard, they were up actually at, Comic-Con, you know, kind of promoting Patient 23, the movie we're working on, and, you know, get that some more exposure.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of, we also, over the weekend, it's still up. It'll be up for another day or two. We put it back up on YouTube. So if you check out Patient 23 on YouTube, you can now watch the short that we have going on.
You can also check out too. I do website design, and I did the website for Patient 23 movie. It's at p23movie.com, and it's, I put back up there also. We had the trailer up, which was about, I think, 2.5 minutes, maybe. Am I wrong about that? 2 minutes?
About that.
And then the short film is about 14 to 15 minutes, I believe.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, so that's both up there. And, you know, you could find more information about the movie there, you know, as far as cast, crew, pictures, a lot of neat behind-the-scenes pictures, pictures of the zombies, and, you know, other things, too. You know, for this movie that, you know, I know myself, and as we're talking about Damien Dragon and quite a few other people, Justin, do believe in this movie.
And Vargas now.
I said Dragon, didn't I?
Yeah, his name's Vargas.
Well, you said the Twitter. You said the Twitter. That's why it threw me off. You said his Twitter name.
Yeah.
So, but no, yeah, so Damien Vargas. And it's a project we all believe in that could become, you know, a really big thing.
I will say one thing, you guys. That movie has gone far and it's reached great lands, because you've even got fans over here.
Well, I'm definitely glad to hear that. And,
oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Obviously, that's a lot of that pays to, you know, thanks to you, Harry.
Oh, no, it's not just down to me. It's just down to the great work that you guys have put in on that movie. I mean, I can retweet and I can share, but, you know, it's the great work you guys have put in that have...
No, Harry.
People loving that movie.
No, Harry. It's because of you.
All right.
But, you know, yeah, we really appreciate it. Don and I put a lot of work into it. So, you know, I'm not trying to take away from the rest of the cast, because they put in just as much work.
Oh, but, yeah, without a doubt.
You know, we put a lot of work into it, and it means a lot to hear from not just our friends, but, you know, you're also, you know, you have your own radio
show. The voice of the voiceless.
Yeah, the voice of the voiceless.
You know, I'm thinking about this, too, and I had a question, and we actually have a unique perspective on this. You know, I was thinking about the, you know, the Comic-Con and stuff, and you see sometimes you get, you know, I guess you want to call it the overzealous fans, you know, the ones that go kind of nuts over everything and just, you know.
We know a few.
like you did for the black guy in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I did. You know what I did? You know, I followed him. I held onto his legs while he walked away. Security had to grab me. It was a bad scene all in all. But, you know, coming from, you know, and I know we both have a wrestling background, and, you know, and if you've been to any of these, you know, have you ever seen anything like that, like in person, like, you know, the crazy rabid fans try to, you know, get to anybody or do anything like that? Or have you ever dealt with anything like that? And I'm asking Justin here.
Me? No. I don't have fans.
that's true. Well, I mean, I remember one time, and it was a very odd situation. We were at a show, and there was a point when people actually liked me and wanted my autograph. You know, that time is long gone. But there was a point when, you know, people did, you know, respect me. And,
is that person real, Don?
Yeah. Don, I believe that was also when you respected yourself.
that was before I started working at the brothels. Yeah. But, got finished, and the show was kind of over, and our fans were leaving, and that time, you know, they asked for autographs and stuff, and I guess this girl really, you know, liked me, and, you know, she really liked my character and all that, and she comes up to me, and she asked me, you know, to sign her shirt on her chest, Now, normally that's not a bad thing. The problem was this girl was maybe 14 years old, and I didn't feel comfortable doing it, so I ended up signing on her arm, and she actually got mad at me because I didn't. And mind you, her parents are probably 6 feet away and were totally okay with it. They thought that that is completely appropriate behavior to do.
To have a grown man signing a 14-year-old shirt.
Yeah, on her breast. And she pointed on the breast. It wasn't like, oh, my stomach on her breast. And it wasn't because, like, she had so many signatures that it was the only spot left. Like, no, there was, like, one other signature on, like, her side. And there was just breast area left. She's like, here, sign here. And I'm like, no, I don't, I'm not going to do that. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you have that sometimes. You have those fans that go crazy. And, you know, I don't know. I was just thinking about it. But that's my experience. And I wanted to talk about Comic-Con, so I feel like we got that out.
Well, that was a good story, Don.
I have my moments.
Now,
so, go ahead.
I was going to say, now, on to the reason why we needed to bring the Great One onto the show.
There is no reason.
Shut up, Donnie.
There's something coming up in 30 days, 31 days. It's the release.
Robert's PlayStation. Oh, wait. No, hold on. Oh, sorry, carry on.
It's the release of the PlayStation 4.
Oh, yeah.
Harry and I are going to be doing a PlayStation 4 review.
Wait, is that 30 days for you or 30 days for me?
30 days for US.
Oh, okay.
It's quite a little longer for you. 82
days European.
Shut up, though.
It converts. 82 days European.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, we touched on it last week, and I think, you know, the PlayStation 4, you know, just seeing some of the videos and some of the reviews and some of the things that this system is going to feature, you know, it really is like, you know, the pinnacle of all of gaming. I mean, all the years we've come, you know, to come from, you know, Atari to Nintendo to 64 to Sega to Dreamcast, you know, this is the pinnacle. This really is. You know, a game entertainment system that you can really, you know, immerse yourself in. You know, and I'm looking, I mean, me personally, I mean, I was looking at the videos of, what's their motion thing called? Like the Kinect, but it's the PlayStation, whatever it is.
The Eye.
That, you know, and I was watching these videos with Justin, and some of the stuff that thing can do is just amazing, you know, and it's just really simple stuff that, you know, but it's just amazing the interaction and the way the games are now, you know, produced and made. I mean, it's a whole adventure. It's amazing. Like I said, how far we've come from, you know, 1984 to, you know, 1979 to now.
Well, not only that, but there, it's also in a way taking a step backwards in the, when, you know, back in the mid-80s, you know, you had your Nintendo, and you would invite all your friends over, and you guys would play over there, and, you know, that's how you socialized. Now they're able to, through the internet and through, you know, voice over internet and whatnot, they have it set up where now it's becoming, and you started seeing this last generation with Xbox Live and, to a certain degree, the PlayStation Network, which didn't really achieve what Xbox Live did, but you're seeing a lot more of a social connectivity, which brings your friends that are around at their houses into your living room without them leaving their houses, so to speak.
I mean, they're already getting that foot in the door, because I've been playing GTA Online, and I've been getting all these requests from friends to be doing all sorts of things throughout the game. So, I mean, the social thing's already started, and it's going to be skyrocketing with the PS4.
Exactly. I mean, when you have the system built in for sharing and for letting everybody know what you're doing. Obviously, if you want to, I mean, you could turn Sony has said you could turn these options off, but I can have it set up where I want Harry to see, or I want Don to see all of my stuff on, you know, whatever latest game I'm doing, or you know, what I'm doing at that moment, and they can pop in and watch my game as I'm playing it, and we can talk about the game. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant.
I'm sure Don doesn't want us to know what he's watching, though.
No.
you know, and I think, you know, with the advent of the online play, I mean, you know, back in the day when you would play, you know, just, for instance, take, you know, Super Mario 64 or, like, Bond, and you would play it and you would beat the game, you know, and that was kind of it, you know what I mean? So now you have the advent of online playing, and now it takes it, you know, so that game is always, you know, refreshing and new, and it's something you can always play and always have a new, you know, experience in, whereas before, you beat the game and it was over. And, you know, I think that's a huge thing that, you know, that is great about this day and age. I mean, everything, you know, like you said, social media, everything's, you know, intertwined. So now, you know, like I could play with Harry, you know, who's all the way across the sea.
That sounded so wrong.
And you wish somebody would play with you like that. But no, you know, I can sit there and enjoy, you know, video games with people across the sea, across the world, like they're right there in my own living room. And that's a really amazing thing that, you know, 20 years ago, I don't think people would have ever thought was possible.
Not on a large scale as it is. I mean,
yeah.
If you were playing a game with me 20 years ago, they probably would have sent the FBI and the police around to your place, Donnie.
Yeah. I mean,
obviously
you had forward thinkers that were able to say, well, you know, in X amount of years, we want to be able to use this technology to, you know, to talk to people over in England, to talk to people over in Japan and play, you know, have guys play against each other. But, you know, us as lay people, we never really thought about, wow, you know, I'm going to be able to play my cousins in California who have the hoverboard, because everybody had a cousin in California that had a hoverboard. so, I mean, it's just, if you took 1987 me and showed them what you could do, my mind would be blown.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You know, and like I said, the money, I mean, you know, video games have always, you know, since they came out, have always been, you know, kind of a staple. And when it first came out, it was a staple with kind of like young people. But now, I mean, it is such a huge, insanely big market. And I mean, the money that goes into making these games, which are, you know, more like, you know, like personal adventures for people. I mean, they take you on these rides of, you know, all these emotions. And, you know, it's something where that it never could have happened before, you know. And to be able to do it now is just, you know, I mean, the budgets on some of these games and even the talent they're using. And, you know, if you watch at the end of basically any game now, there's like, you know, 15, 20 minutes of credits, just like you would see in any movie or any TV show.
Yeah.
You know, and I know.
And
good.
Well, along with, you know, like you're saying, it takes teams and teams of people to build this. It's not just like it takes a bunch of bodies. It's taken years now. Like Grand Theft Auto 5, what did they say? It took something like 7 to 10 years to make?
Yeah.
Something like that.
The attention to detail in these games is also insane.
Yeah.
You know, these games are so lifelike. And I remember, I think, last week you showed me a clip of, I believe it was NBA, was it 2K14 or something?
Yeah.
And I mean, that game, it looks so realistic. Like if you put a side-by-side shot in some of those things, I wouldn't be able to tell which one is the actual game and which one's the video game.
Yeah, I remember playing NBA Jam with back, you know, my brother when I was out on Super Nintendo, and we got it for Christmas or something. My uncle comes up and, you know, he's watching us play. I'm like, oh, doesn't this look lifelike? And he's like, you're an asshole. That doesn't look lifelike. But nowadays I could say, look, doesn't this look lifelike? And he might be drunk enough to actually think it is lifelike.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's amazing. And I also saw, too, one thing I do like about the PlayStation, I mean, because they have a lot of new things they're doing. And I like the one where now when you download the games, you're going to be able to download a part of the game and start playing as opposed to waiting for the whole game to download. So, it's going to download in the background. So now you don't have to wait for however long it takes to do these games. You can kind of get it almost instantly, which is a smart thing by Sony, because everybody wants what they want and they want it now. So to be able to do that, you know, and then with the additions of the different apps and things like that, you know, I think, you know, it's just, it's a really amazing thing. And I think, you know, I didn't go out and buy a PlayStation 3 when it first came out, because I was like, oh, you know, it's going to be good, whatever. But this PlayStation 4, man, this is a whole new level of gaming.
Yeah. And it's another thing that we're actually looking to, we're looking into of doing, so that way when we can interact with fans of the show, fans of our product and whatnot, of doing Let's Plays, where we're able to say Don and I are setting up a game where we get a couple fans or a couple friends or whatnot to jump in on the game. We play before the show, and then we go on the show and we can talk about it, and, you know, talk about other things as well. But it's enabling us to have a little bit of social interactivity with people.
Oh yeah, you know, without a doubt. I mean, what I know you personally, you're really looking forward, and you showed me some clips of it. You're looking forward to what's that racing game that's coming out that you're looking forward to?
Drive Club. I want to set up a Moose Knuckle Drive Club.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and to be able to do that and play with, you know, like I said, not only friends, but people that listen to the shows and do that. I mean, that's, you know, that's really, you know, I'm not a huge racing fan, but like all these games are so intricate and designed so great that I would even play that just because it's the way it looks and the way it is, you know. So even games that you wouldn't normally play, you might actually play now because they're designed so amazingly.
Yeah, I mean, I am interested in checking out NBA, and I'm not even a basketball fan. I'm interested in checking out just for the, you know, there's a big debate on whether games are art or not, but for lack of a better term, to check out the art behind it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and I remember the first time I really ever saw like the kind of the behind the scenes, because I really wasn't into it, was when I played God of War, and
I love that game.
Amazing game. I mean, and actually the whole series has really been great. And I remember seeing the different, like, the concepts and the artwork, and it was the first time I realized everything that really goes into making these games. I mean, it's not some guy who's like, oh, I'm going to have this guy fight gods. Like, there's these whole teams of people and departments and things like that. That's just, you know, it's mind-boggling. You know, I'm looking forward to the one game. Well, I'm actually looking forward to the Second Son, Infamous, because I love the first one.
Yeah.
That was an awesome game. That was one of the first games I actually played on PlayStation 3. I played that. I played Arkham Asylum, a couple other ones, but Infamous was the first one I played. And seeing the clips of that, you know, makes me want to play it more. And then also the new Assassin's Creed that's coming out too. I'm looking forward to that just because I think the Assassin's Creed series has been, you know, really good.
Since the newest one, I think it was 3, I kind of lost interest because of obviously changing characters. So it was a bit of a letdown, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I got into it. I got into the series, and I have this thing too where, like, you know, you start playing a series of games, and you know, like Final Fantasy. I thought some of them lacked, and some of them were great. But I liked them all because I'd played the series, so I'm like, oh, you know, I was really into when each one came out. So even if it wasn't maybe as good, I think I was into it because I'd already played the other, you know, 75 Final Fantasies.
Yeah, I got lost on Final Fantasy when they went online. When it became an MMO, it was, I mean, after 7, really, because 8, 9, 10, 11, I really wasn't into all that much. I picked up, played a little bit, but 7 was really like the pinnacle of Final Fantasy, and they keep saying that they'll never do a Final Fantasy 7 remake unless they make a game that's better than Final Fantasy 7, and I don't know, you know, when or if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I liked and I don't know if you know the one with the guy, Cloud was his name.
That's 7.
That's 7, right? Yeah, that was the amazing one I loved. I mean, I played that And I couldn't put it down from the minute I started to the till the time it ended. I mean, I couldn't do it.
It's where one of your teammates is a black guy.
So why do you have to point that out? So what if he's a black guy?
I was just saying, Don, that's probably why you relate to it so well.
I relate to black people well? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I mean, you were a fan of the guy on The Walking Dead? You're a fan of the guy from Final Fantasy?
I was a fan of the guy, not the black guy.
Oh.
Don't say it.
So Harry, what game are you most looking forward to?
It's a throw up between Watch Dogs and Lego Marvel.
Hello Kitty. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say Hello Kitty.
I was waiting for you to come out with that one, Donnie.
No, what ones were they? I'm sorry.
Watch Dogs and Lego Marvel.
Yeah, unfortunately, did you read the bad news about Watch Dogs today?
What?
The bad news on Watch Dogs, it's been delayed until spring.
Ooh. Okay, well, you can take that out of my answers then.
Yeah. To everybody that was looking forward to it, if for some reason you're listening to this show and this is the first time you're hearing it, sorry for giving you the bad news, but you probably already know it, with the exception of Harry.
Yeah, I don't tend to keep up with these things anymore.
Yeah, I'm the video game nerd.
Yeah. I want to touch on
not real steal any kind of copywritten material.
I want to touch on something real quick, but I want to let anybody know that's listening that wants to come, call in and chime in on this conversation. You're more than welcome to. The phone number to call in is 718-664-9133. Call in with anything you want to talk about the PlayStation, maybe what games you're looking forward to, things, your opinion on it. But I want to touch on too. I think one of the things, the great things about the PlayStation 4 and Sony in general, when Xbox One came out, they tried marketing it as this, entertainment, your all-in-one entertainment system, And what Sony did is they have those aspects of it, but they said, look, this is a gaming system. We started with gaming, we're gamers, and we're going to game. And you can do the other things, but we're going to stick to our roots, and this is for the gamers. And I think that's why so many people are excited about the PlayStation 1 than the Microsoft's version of gaming systems.
Yeah, I would have to. I'd be hard pressed to disagree with that, because when you have they just sent a complete mixed message, and it's been nonstop. And this is coming from a guy that loved the 360. I was all about the Xbox 360. I loved the original Xbox. I thought the PlayStation 2, while it's the greatest selling console in history, but I thought it was nice. It didn't have a lot of features that the original Xbox had. Same thing with the PlayStation 3 was it. To me, it felt like a mess because there's a lot of things that they did wrong. Compared to the 360. It feels like it's now the shoe's on the other foot with this time around. It feels like now the Xbox One, Microsoft is doing a lot of things wrong that Sony is doing right. Between their marketing, their message, they had a lot of goofy rules when they first announced it, and then they flip-flopped and went back, and it's just been a real confusing mess. And I know a lot of gamers, they're like me, where they're big time Xbox guys, and then they're jumping ship to Sony because it's like, okay, these guys get me, these guys know what I want, these guys are bringing me entertainment the way I like it. They're bringing me indie games. They're bringing me AAA games. They're bringing me good first party games. I mean, you can't compare anything to Sony's first party games. Just nothing compares to it.
Without a doubt. I mean, because it would kind of be like McDonald's being like, yeah, we've done burgers for all these years, but now we're an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
And It just doesn't make sense. And I think one of the great things that Sony did this time, I think with the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, I think they were rushed. I think there was a demand for them, and Sony and Microsoft felt a lot of pressure to get it out. So they put it out, which was a decent product, but it could have been a lot better. And they didn't take the time to work in the very minute details of what gamers want and what gamers like. So now they took their time, and they, you know, and from what I hear, and I mean, of course, you know, we'll have to see once we play it, but from what I hear from reviews and whatnot, they got it right. You know, they took the time, they listened to people, and there were times when they came out with it and people were testing it, and they were like, look, this doesn't work. This doesn't work, or this does work, or we need this, we need that. So they went back to the drawing board and fixed that, you know, to make it better for the gamers. Yeah, you're going to have the entertainment aspect of it. There's going to be a lot of things you can do with it besides, and that's what they stuck with. And I think that's one of the smartest things to do. You don't steer away from your, you know, your main fan base just because you're trying to create this thing, you know, that Microsoft was doing. And I get it. Microsoft's a little different because they are in the computer business and they're in the, you know, and they were a computer-based business and they're trying to take over that whole market. So they want, you know, the Xbox to be able to integrate with all the other thing. And I get it, but I think they're losing a lot of fans because of that.
Well, they also also to a degree, I mean, everybody wants the living room, whether it's, you know, LG, Sony, Microsoft, mm-hmm. Apple, the guys who do Roku, they all want the living room because that is where America goes. Like you go to Japan, the reason why Sony and Nintendo are king is because Japan, they have smaller houses there. A lot of times they're out of the house. They have their portables. Over here, living room is the king. America,
yeah, it is.
And in England as well. Americans and Harry, you could say yay or nay, but Britons, we love just sitting in front of a TV with our family and our friends, watching our movie, playing our games, and that's our leisure time.
Now, exactly the same.
Now, if you could capitalize that in one giant box, like for example, the Xbox One, you can talk to your TV, you could tell it to do this or that or whatever. Okay, that's great. That, you know, that's what everybody wants. But when you're marketing something like that, you have to market it properly. And I don't think they did it right. I mean, especially take out their confusing rules, put that aside.
Yeah.
But when they first came out, their opening bid, everybody was like, wow, this is the next Xbox. This is the next 360. And they said, first they call it the Xbox One, which is an awful name. And then they came out and they said, this is what it could do. It can watch Drew Carey. It can watch an NBA game. And they showed these pre-recorded clips of the box doing this thing, which it doesn't do it the way that they had it doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So they used a bit of you know, Hollywood magic on that to try and fool customers, which you're talking about video game fans are the people watching this, not like the majority of people in the world, you know, reading about the Xbox One in Time magazine aren't going to really care too much about the Xbox One because it says Xbox on it. It's not like the Apple TV where people are like, oh, well, it's Apple, I want to buy it. Even Roku, probably if they just offered the Xbox One as it's just a standalone box, it does what the Roku or it does what the Apple TV does, you're going to have people going out buying the Apple TV because they love Apple products, and have people going out buying the Roku box because they love Android products. Nobody's going to buy that that Microsoft product. Because it's an Xbox, it's in under that Xbox umbrella, now you're talking gamers. And gamers don't want that. Gamers just want to sit in front of their console and play their game, or sit in front of their computer and play their game. All those extra bells and whistles, I guarantee you majority of people already have those. You know, over here, streaming is huge. So you either already have a Roku box or an Apple TV, and you've invested already into that ecosystem. You're not going to now turn around and, because you could talk to your TV, buy all of this Microsoft stuff, which, you know, why would I do that? You know what I mean? I mean, I get the PlayStation 4. It has those features, but what they're telling me is this is what it can do. It can play games better than anything else can play games. And they're telling me this could do TV better than your Apple TV. It also plays games, but you know, we'll tell you about that later. But it does the TV better than your Apple TV, better than your Roku. Well, my Apple TV works fine. I paid $100 for it. You know, I'm sure you paid $100 for your Roku, and they both work fine. They both do exactly what we want them to do. I don't need a new thing to do that for me when all I need is a new thing to play better graphics. You know, I'm not a computer guy as far as upgrading my computer. I'm a console guy. I like buying a box. I like sitting in front of my TV. So I don't need that stuff. That's where they confused and drew the line on a lot of gamers, because we didn't want that.
Yeah. I think the big selling point, and you, like you said, you just touched on all that. You know, when you come out and you say, Xbox, and your selling point is it has apps and it talks and this and that, you're losing a huge fan base on that because they don't want to hear that. And like you said, most people, I don't know many people who don't have some sort of way to stream Netflix either on their computer or their television or something
else. Does that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because nowadays, I mean, it's such a huge thing, you know. So, I mean, you know, DVDs and Blu-rays are kind of like dying out. So streaming is a huge thing. So everybody already has that. So if you want to market it, you come out, like you said, and you say, hey, this system plays games better than it ever has. We stuck to games. This is what we do. Oh, by the way, it also does this, you know. And that's the add-on, be your main selling point. It can't be your main selling point because, like you said, why would I go spend $400 on an Xbox One when I can go get an Apple TV for $100, you know, and all that other stuff. You know, I personally have the Logitech Review, which is similar to like a, you know, Apple TV or something like, or Roku actually. And I love it. I paid $99 for it. The thing is amazing. I can, you know, I can go on the internet, I can search the internet on my TV and I can do all that. So I don't need my PlayStation to do all that. I need my PlayStation to blow me away and play amazing games. And I think another thing that's... What's that?
I said, I'm glad you said away there and finished your sentence.
Yeah, at first I thought there was a bit of a pause there. I didn't think you were going with the away.
No. Yeah, so...
I'm done. I'm mad. You made fun of me.
I am, and I'm gonna burn down your houses, okay? I'll throw stones at your hut, okay, Harry? I'll throw stones at your hut.
My house is bigger than yours.
Probably. But I also think, too, one of the things that's great for Sony is that by Xbox or Microsoft doing what they did, they're losing a lot of games. You know, the games coming out for Sony are way more interesting and way better than the games coming out for Microsoft because people are like, you know, we want to go with Sony. They're obviously what they're geared towards. That's, you know, they're gaming and, you know, our vision will be seen best on a PlayStation as opposed to Xbox. And that's going to lose Microsoft a lot of revenue.
To a degree, I agree with you, but it's more on their approachability. Microsoft made it very difficult for, I mean, I'm not an indie developer, but from interviews I've read and stories I've heard, Microsoft made it very difficult to produce on your, you know, to be your own publisher on the Xbox 360. They were very closed-minded, closed door about things. PlayStation, Sony, on the other hand, they were like, no, you know, bring your games to us. You know, you can put them out there. You can have fun. You know, do your own thing. You know, it is what it is. Pretty much as long as you weren't, you know, raping and killing kids for no reason in your game, then you can do whatever you want. But when you have that as your core, you know, you have lately there's been a big kind of turnaround on indie games because it used to be indie games where, okay, they're these fun, cute, little, quirky little things. Now people are getting out there and they're making their own games and it's becoming, okay, these are not in the size and scope, but in the actual enjoyability, these games can compare to AAA games and third-party title, you know, third-party games where it's becoming its own market that people that people are just loving. Our producer just brought up a great point. Limbo. Limbo is a game that killed. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was made by a small team that you know, compared to like an Assassin's Creed, is made by a small team. It gets out there and people love it. Now when you have that accessibility, games like that are going to come out, and games like that are going to be what draws people in. I'm excited to play Octodad. I'm excited to play Outlast. You know, I'm excited to play other games that, yeah, they're on the computer, they're on Steam, but I like my PlayStation. I like my PlayStation, and I'm going to buy it on that. You know, when I don't have the availability to play those games, because I've played AAA games for years and years and years, but when I, you know, so those games are going to be, I know the way it works. They say, oh, this is exclusive. Well, 2 years down the road, it's not exclusive anymore because the contract runs out. But when you're saying, no, you can't produce, all, you know, you can't self-publish on my system, well, then it's always going to be exclusive on PlayStation. So it's just, I feel that's where they're really winning the hearts of gamers.
I've got a question for both of you quickly while we're still on the topic of games. Are you finding that, like, a lot of games, the story is actually better than the game? Because I've been thinking about this for months, and I've never actually vocalized this.
I think sometimes, yeah. I mean, I think sometimes when you actually get into some of the games, the actual gameplay lags, but the story is kind of amazing and keeps you on a thrill ride. You know, I've had that sometimes where it's like, wow, the story's really good, but then the gameplay, you know, is the same. And I've had it vice versa too, where the gameplay was awesome, but the story was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna commit nerd sacrilege right now and say the game that comes to mind on that question is the original Mass Effect. The gameplay, in my opinion, was awful. I mean, it was an okay shooter. I think it had kind of like a cover system that didn't really work all that well, but the story was absolutely brilliant. I mean, the story, just from beginning to end, I was captivated. I wanted to know what happened next. I wanted to follow up. I wanted to, you know, search all the little stuff and all that, just to find all the neat little things about the universe.
Well, yeah. I'm going to say everyone can get their hate mail ready, because I think GTA was one of those, well, GTA 5 was one of those games where the story, well, the game was great, but the story was even better.
That's what I'm hearing. You know, unfortunately, I'm saving up for my PlayStation 4, so I've never played it.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet either. But yeah, you know, I've had that. I've had that issue, and I think sometimes, you know, I think it's hard, and I think it's just like kind of like with a movie. You know, if you take like look at Avatar, the graphics were amazing. You know, that movie looked spectacular, especially if you saw it in an IMAX or you saw it on a, you know, HD 57-inch TV or whatever. But the storyline of the movie was crap. I mean, the storyline sucked. You know, but the graphics were amazing, and you see that now with movies that come out a lot. Sometimes you'll have, you know, these movies where, you know, the acting is great, but the storyline's horrible. And it could be vice versa. Like, you know, the storyline's great, but the movie looks like crap. And I think, you know, you're going to have that, you know, in the same thing with games. I mean, Justin, you touched on earlier how you have, you know, these independent, you know, gamers and stuff, and it's very similar to the movies, you know, where every once in a while you'll see these independent movies that come out and blow you away. You know, and it's and I think you're going to have that, you know, with these little games. You know, sometimes they'll come out and they'll blow you away. And it's something that I think is necessary, because it gives everybody a chance, you know, to show their vision and show their work. And sometimes some, you know, that vision, that work will come from, you know, an independent or an unknown, and it'll be amazing.
And speaking of movies, nice little segue there, Don. I hear you got your movie review for this week for the movie Captain Ron.
Captain Ron. Yeah, no, Captain Phillips, actually.
Oh, so.
I went to see Captain Phillips. I was thinking about this. I wanted to do a movie, kind of a movie review thing, because I think since we're into entertainment and we have our own production company and things of that nature, I think, you know, our views should be taken on movies and what we think of them. So I wanted to do a, you know, movie review maybe once a week, once every other week. And I'd like to do, in the future, I'd like to do movies with, like, really good twists so I can ruin it for every one of the callers out there. but, yeah, so I went and saw Captain Phillips. And first off, you know, I want to say the movie was a good movie, you know, through and through. I mean, you know, it makes you want to stand up at the end and say America because, you know, a lot of people don't – I don't know if they're, they should be familiar with the SEAL Team 6 and what happened where – you know, they captured a captain of this, you know, huge Freightliner ship thing. And, you know, the pirates in Somalia captured him. And basically SEAL Team 6, the Navy SEALs went in and cleaned house and got him back. And, you know, he was an American citizen and they did what they had to do to make sure he was alive. And they kicked butt. But yeah, so the movie, you know, the movie started out, you know, it's Tom Hanks, and Tom Hanks, there hasn't been many Tom Hanks movies that I don't like or I haven't enjoyed. What was that one? Wasn't he in the Mermaid one? There was a Mermaid one he did a while ago.
Splash?
Was that it?
Splash was amazing.
I hated Splash. Anyway. Really? You well, you also had me watch Cobra the other day, so, you know.
yeah, Cobra is easily one of the greatest movies of all time.
It's coming from a guy wearing an Arnold Schwarzenegger shirt right now. So the movie started out, and basically Tom Hanks, he's, you know, he's getting ready. He's got his family life, and his wife is, well, she's kind of homely looking. But I guess that works for him because he's, you know, happy with his life, and I guess they've been in love because when they first met, she was hot, but now she's not. But I guess it's love, so they stuck together. So, you know, he ends up going on this trip. And his trip, he's taking a bunch of cargo from, you know, basically the top of, like, Africa to the bottom of Africa. And in order to do that, he's got to go through the Somalian waters, the Somalian pirate waters. And this was the time, you know, this was a couple years ago, I think, like 2008, 2007, 2009, whatever, when we were having all these pirate attacks. And I'm sure everybody saw on the news, you know, and for me personally, like when I think of pirates, and I guess because it's the way we're raised and we see things on TV, I'm thinking like big ships and cannonballs and guns and things like that. That is not even close to what happened. So they're sailing down, they get to Somalian waters, and there's like these two small boats, almost like jet skis, like chasing after them. Mind you, this ship is the size of like 18 football fields. And they got these two little boats, and they start, like, panicking. They're freaking out. You know, and I'm thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, just like, brush them off. Like, shoot them. Like, there's, like, you know, five guys. There was, like, five Somalians chasing after him who had a total combined weight of probably 95 pounds who were high because they were chewing on these, like, leaves that they eat. They, I guess, like almost like meth leaves or something. So, you know, the pirates start chasing them. Half the pirates don't even have shoes. Like, you know, it's just this really half-assed, like, kind of thing that's going on. So they get close to the boat, and Tom Hanks is like, okay, release the cannons or something. And I'm thinking, oh, they got the artillery, so this movie's going to be over really quick. He's going to shoot them, they're going to die, and I'm going to go home in about 5 minutes. And that didn't happen. Apparently their cannons are water cannons, so they're just shooting, like, water at them. And, you know, the pirates are like, well, that's just water, so we're going to go around it. And they go around it, and they get up to the boat. So now at this point, I'm like, oh, well, why don't you just turn the boat a little bit to the left, and it'll just crush them and kill them all. And they don't do that. Instead, they're, like, freaking out. They're, like, locked down, batting down the hatches, whatever. So then the pirates pull out this makeshift ladder that they attach to the side of the ship. They actually, like, they have to get to the side of the ship, and they hook the ladder on, and they start climbing up. Now, mind you, there's a crew of probably like 20, 25 people on this big ship, and there's five Somalians. And granted, they have guns. I get it. Now, I don't know why this ship didn't have any weapons on it to begin with, but that's another story. So they get on the ship, and, you know, they're running around, and they're trying to find everybody. And they end up finding Tom Hanks in his, you know, captain's office. And they, you know, I guess Tom Hanks, trying to be the good captain of the ship, told mainly everybody else to hide out in the engine room because they wouldn't be able to find it and they wouldn't be able to get the keys or whatever. Well, apparently Somali's really smart because he's like, take me to the engine room. He's like, that's where shit's going on because Tom Hanks had him turn off the boat so they couldn't go anywhere and do anything. So he's like, take me to the engine room. So, like I said, they weren't even wearing shoes. I guess the guys in the engine room heard over the radio that the Somalians were taking Tom Hanks to the engine room. So they decide to put a bunch of broken glass down on the entrance to the engine room, thinking that the guy who doesn't have the shoes would hurt his feet. Well, he did because he's dumb, and he cut his feet up on this broken glass that's on the ground. So he's almost out. Then as they get to the engine room, the one Somalian's out, and Tom Hanks took another Somalian. So there was two Somalians and Tom Hanks, and the rest of them stayed in the captain's, you know, coop or wherever to, you know, basically watch over the boat and, you know, just hold the other two hostages that were in the captain's thing there. So they all went – the two guys went down with Tom Hanks, and the one guy hurts his feet, so he's incapacitated. So they get down to the engine room, and lo and behold, they end up capturing the Americans on the boat, end up capturing – the Somalian dude, and he was like the leader of the Somalian guys. They have a gun to his head. They're like, look, you know, you guys get off the boat, take your Somalian friends and leave. Here's 30 grand. You guys got 30 grand. Call it a day. You take your lifeboat, go back to Somalia, and we'll say that's it. So they end up making the trade off. Like, you know, the Somalians give Tom Hanks back, and the Americans give the Somalian back, and the Somalian's about to get into the lifeboat, but at the last second, somehow they knock Tom Hanks in a lifeboat and they take off. So they knock him in the lifeboat. They end up taking off. So now the boat, this big huge boat, is chasing this little boat. And Tom Hanks is stuck in there and they don't know what to do. So they end up finally getting a hold of like the U.S. Navy, and the Navy's like, we got this. Just wait, we got this. We'll be there. You know, just hang out. Just don't lose trail of the boat. So. they end up, the U.S. Navy ends up coming in, and, you know, they're like, we're going to negotiate, we're going to do this, blah, 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 blah. Of course, Somalians don't want to hear it. They're like, we're not negotiating, we want $1 million, whatever, for Tom Hanks. So the U.S. is like, well, if you guys can't get it done, we're sending in the SEAL team. And the SEAL team will make sure that Tom Hanks does not reach Somalian land, and he's going to, you know, be a free man, and he's going to be fine. So Navy can't handle it. Navy SEAL Team 6 comes in, and this lifeboat that they were in was probably – it was enclosed. It was actually an enclosed lifeboat, and it was probably maybe like 10 feet in diameter with three windows. And they end up surrounding the boat, and basically Somalia's like, oh, we're not coming out. We're not going to come out, you know, whatever. So SEAL Team 6 had three snipers, one on each window, and they ended up having a tow to the boat. And so they were connected to the boat. So they couldn't get shot. They had to take all the shots at the same exact time for it to happen, because if they didn't, what would happen is they would end up killing Tom Hanks once the first Somalian got killed. So there's two guys – at this point, there's two guys in the window. So they have two green shots. They're about to take two shots, and they're waiting for the one other guy to get in the window. He wasn't doing it. He couldn't do it. He wasn't going in the window. He wasn't going anywhere near the – they couldn't take the shot. Well, last second, the Navy guy says, you know, hit the brakes on the tow. He hits the brakes on the tow. The guy pops head forward for just a second. Navy SEAL Team 6 comes in, shoots all three of them within 3 seconds, kills them all, saves Tom Hanks' life, and I felt like a true American when I watched the end of it.
Shut up! Give me a turn to speak!
But that was my movie review, and it was a good movie. And like I said, you know, it makes you feel like a true American when you watch something like that.
So I guess
maybe I'll actually be American.
Well, that was more towards Justin.
Well, just real quick, we might take it into overtime a little bit, but before we do, we'd like to thank everybody that's listening, in on the iTunes, everybody that's listening on the phone, everybody's listening in on the online as well. Thank you guys. We appreciate your support. We had a great opening show last 2 weeks ago, and we hope to continue to entertain you guys.
Yeah, like I said, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Harry for being here tonight. You know, I want to thank everybody for listening. You know, you guys showed us last week, you know, that you guys really are supporting us. You know, we look forward to bringing you guys great shows, and, you know, we're going to keep this going. Don't forget to, you know, support us. What's the Twitter for Moose Knuckle, Justin?
At Moose KE. I am at AWSOM82.
And I'm at Donnie Warren, D-O-N-N-I-E, Warren. And, Harry, how can they follow you?
At Instant Classic H.
All right. With that being said, I'd like to wish everybody a good night. Thanks for coming out, and we'll see you all again in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
You know, this isn't going to have a happy ending. People don't want a champion. They want to eat cheeseburgers, play the lotto, and watch television.
Hey, how did you get like this? I want to know.
There wasn't one thing, I can tell you that.
Go on.
I just don't think I can continue to live in a place that embraces and nurtures apathy as if it was a virtue.
You know different. You know better.
I didn't say I was different or better. I'm not. Hell, I sympathize. I sympathize completely. Apathy is a solution. I mean, it's easier to lose yourself in drugs than it is to cope with life. It's easier to steal what you want than it is to earn it.
Yeah.
It's easier to beat a child than it is to raise it. Hell, love costs. It takes effort and work.
We are talking about people who are mentally ill. We are talking about people fucking crazy.
No,
today.
We're talking about everyday life here. You can't afford to be this naive.